Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about common sense practice in business. What does that mean? Lord knows what that means, but what we know is everybody, it seems, in the past 20 years has had really good jobs and they've been in a company for a long time. And then they're like, you know, I am just not going to take this anymore. And then they go and they start a small business. What happens in their small business? They come out with the same answer. Oh, I'm just not going to take this anymore. So what's the common thread here? What we're going to be talking about today is about getting the language clear, skill sets, tasks, all clear right up front, and maybe that machine might start to work better. What do you think? It's really great. We notice when people say, oh, I have a mission, I have a purpose, I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a business and things are going to be hunky-dory. Well, they turn around and they have increased anxiety. We see a lot of people with bankruptcies. We have a lot of people who then have marital problems and they say, what is going on here? And it's really they have a lot of conflict at the place that they spend most of their work hours, and that is at work. Most of the week, you know, we're at work, we're doing something for work, and if we're like some of these people where you're also answering that phone when we're in the bathroom at midnight, you're still answering the phone for work, you know? And let's talk about that. What is expected of you at work? How can you see that it will work best for everyone to get the job done? And how can it potentially decrease anxiety and stress on all levels? Today, my guest is Rex Connor. His book is What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business? Don't Expect Fish to Climb Trees. Rex, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. I am so glad to be here. Thanks for talking with me.
Well, you're welcome, Rex. And don't you think, you know, over the past 20 years, we've seen shifts like nobody's business in business, huh?
It is, and we attribute it to different things. I know there's a lot of energy right now around, well, millennials are moving jobs real quickly, but
right.
You know, this is not a new occurrence that there has been, just as you described, a lot of stress, a lot of people mm-hmm. wanting to do something else, trying it out, finding out it's not what they wanted. So it's not a new phenomenon, but maybe we recognize a whole lot more of it. There's a lot more energy around it more recently.
You know, it's really interesting. I have a skill set that I wanted to bring to an elder care community that was opening up. And I sat there. She says, oh, well, you have to come for the interview process. And I'm thinking, okay, this is really stupid, but I'll show up anyway. Then she had me fill out an application, and I put on there my name, my address, my phone number, and I put everything else, see resume. Okay, I graduated high school in the 70s. Are you seriously kidding me? Really? And we all know this process because I think this is really commonplace now for elders. You know, people are saying the stuff that they're asking me to do and the stuff that they want is really ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So then I put it all down, and I sat there for 4.5 hours. Finally, I said, you know what? I mean, where am I in the list? She says, oh, we've been calling you for 2 hours ago. You just didn't answer and get up. And I said, what? Nobody called me. And, well, at any rate, the woman comes over and she says to me, didn't even give courtesy to stand up or in a room or anything in an interview. And she says, oh, your skill set is you're overqualified for the positions that we're hiring for, but thank you for showing up, and walked away. And I said, wow, you know, immediately, don't you know, the next thing that showed up for me was the Steve Jobs quote that we shouldn't be hiring people sometimes for the things that we need them to rudimentary follow or do, we should be hiring people for the skill sets or the things that they could bring to us and that they can teach us. Do you know what I mean? So, in other words, we always look at can someone move this from here to there? But we also want people who come in and can help us grow our companies. And I think that's where a lot of confusion is getting, you know, in the workplace now between subjectivity and objectivity and what you bring to the job and what you're expected to do of the job. Don't you think? I think that quandary right there, that if you took those four corners and you said, that's where all the mishmash now is in work, don't you think?
I think you hit the nail on the head, and your story is horrific. I think all of us cringe as we hear that story. We
crazy.
Think, oh, that's horrible. But the problem is the subjectivity, and it's on both sides, especially in the hiring process that you're describing, making job requirements clear, not only for the job applicant, which we all know doesn't happen because we see job postings that say, you need 3 years experience, you need to be a team player. What does that tell us? But also the company, that doesn't help them screen anyone when their requirements are so vague. How is that a screening process?
Right. You know, it's crazy when I hear that word team player. I was a dental hygienist for several decades. I wanted to throw up, I swear. Because if anyone knows about a dental hygienist job, she's always the one that's stuck between the office people and the dentist. She kind of has her own job. She's usually a contract person. And her job is to, quote, clean teeth. That's her job. That was what I was always hired for, clean teeth. So I would have like 20 patients a day, right? Well, my person didn't show up. I went outside to breathe some fresh air. And you'd hear it in the back office. No, 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 what is she doing? Why didn't she do that? You know, that kind of thing, you know? And that's a perfect example of not having it clear with all people in the office who everyone's job expectations are and how those mesh together or how those conflict, don't you think?
Especially in small offices. And because typically in small offices, there's so much to do that people have their assigned duties or the duties for which they're hired. And then there's probably another dozen other duties that are expected, maybe clearly expected. Maybe it's just a vague expectation. So, yes, you need, everyone needs a good, objective job description that covers the entirety of the job.
Yeah, mine was clean teeth. I did it, and when I wasn't doing it, I was outside because I needed to breathe fresh air. Yeah, I had my own agenda.
Certainly.
You know, and then we think about also, too, when you talk about when people leave jobs. I know when I left that job, it was pretty tough for them to fill a position because the girls coming in behind me could only do 8 people a day, and I was doing 20. So we always think about that too, you know, what kind of jobs, who are you leaving and what are you leaving and taking with you? You know, many times people take job security or job secrets with them, you know, and they say, what does that mean? Well, that means that you're taking a lot of information and you could go, and if you don't have any restrictions on your contract when you were hired, you can go open up a similar, you know, business right next door, 2 doors down. And maybe do it better, maybe do it bigger, maybe do it cheaper, right?
Which you should probably do. But I know an example of that in a small business I worked with, some people, 2 nurses started a hospice company. And they asked me to come in and help them structure the business from the beginning. What a great opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the first things, there are two practices I taught them at the very beginning. And consequently, 2 practices that they would teach their new hires. One is how to communicate clearly. That's another subject. But the one that pertains to what you're talking about is they learned and they taught everybody, first day on the job orientation, they learned to map out a process, to do a flow chart of all the processes that they did on their job, because they were required every 6 months to revise that and capture the best practices, capture the ways they found to do it better, because people inevitably will do that, find a better way to do things, and they wanted it captured for 2 reasons. 1, so they could recognize those people, and 2, so when they walked out the door, they had that corporate knowledge that otherwise would be walking out the door with them, they had it captured.
Right.
and can pass it on.
Absolutely. You know, when a lot of times when we look for jobs, it always says job requirements. So can you share with us the difference between job requirements, tasks, and skills? Because I'll tell you, that is such a gray line. And especially with people who have been, you know, doing a profession for quite a while, you go in and you say, you know, I've done it like forever. So, you know, and you go into the job and it's like nothing like you looked at it before. And there's so too much conflict, I think, sometimes.
There certainly is. And I love your question and how you define those three as three different parts of a job and a job description, because they really need to be. In fact, I'm in Torrance, California at American Honda doing a workshop on that subject. So it's right. Not only near and dear to me, it's very, very recent. But a job requirement, and this isn't industry standard, but the way I differentiate between the three components you mentioned, a job requirement are the things that aren't skill-based. They are the job parts of the job that you have to do. You have to dress this way. You have to work this many hours a week. You have to show up on time.
Mm-hmm.
No skill involved in that. They're just parameters you have around your job. Those are important. Now, each job is made up of various tasks that you do. Some jobs just have, well, your dental hygienist job just had one task, clean teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Some jobs have many different tasks. And you want a clear listing of the tasks, because from each task, you want to identify the skills that are required for that task. And those skills are going to tell you who you need to hire, because you're going to split those skills into two different groups. They're the skills that you are going to train someone to have when they come to the job, if you have a training program. You don't need to hire people that have those skills if you're going to train them.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the skills on your list, that's what you go on a job posting. I call those prerequisite skills. And
so
that,
skills should be on your Craigslist job.
Skills, exactly. That's what you focus on. You hire people that have prerequisite skills. That's different than job requirements that everyone needs. That's different than the skills you're going to train. That's not the tasks. It's the skills, what they have in their head that can translate to their hands or their performance. That's what you want to hire. That's what you focus on. And if you don't mind, Dr. Jeanette, if I can take that another step.
Sure.
If these skills are identified well, you also put on them how well they have to do it. Like, not just clean teeth, you need to be able to clean 20 people's teeth per day. Because some people might come in, as you said, well, I can clean teeth. Yeah, but you can only do 8 a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't work in this job. So when they come in for a job interview, you don't talk to them. You don't ask questions. You say, show me. Because all those skills are actions that they take. They can demonstrate those. You don't have to talk about them.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. It's a thing always in some of these healthcare professions that I've been in there, you know, for since I think 1973 I've been in healthcare. And every single time you get into something, it's something different. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt, of probably the 30 offices that I worked at, because I did a lot of temp work too, every single office was different. Every single office had so much, many moods and so many blah, blah, blah drama. And it was like, I mean, you always felt like you were jumping into somebody's, you almost felt like you were a foster kid getting bounced around. You know what I mean? Like it was like really tough, you know, because you were always like hearing all the dogma and the drag out stuff because, hey, you were the new kid on the block and, you know, they could tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of just had to sit there and take it and listen to it and everything and, you know, do your best or whatever. And you never knew what expectations were. It's sort of like saying, I want you to jump high, but I didn't say how high, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a great description. And you've touched on a couple of great points there. One is not setting the standard clearly. But the other is fitting into a job. You know, that's important for all of us. And we kind of cover that with a vague concept of you need to be a team player. Well, that doesn't tell me anything about your team or what that means.
Yeah.
And there is a way to clarify that language by translating it to observable performances.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in an interview, hopefully I would like it if the people writing the job posting would have clarified this ahead of time. But if they didn't, and I'm in a job interview, I ask the question, when you observe me fitting into your team, what are you observing me do?
Right.
And you want a list of observable performances because that takes the subjectivity out of it. And that tells me, one, if I fit, and two, if I want to fit. You know, if I have to be able to listen to people's drama without reacting negatively, for example, maybe one of the observable performances, that tells me there's a whole lot of drama and a whole lot of conflict around it. I can pursue that more or ask more about it. Or better yet, I can say, why don't you set up a just interaction with the team and see if I can demonstrate all these performances you just outlined and actually have some experience with what you're going to be dealing with. That would tell everybody if you fit.
You know, this idea of team player stuff, it's such an illusion. You know, it truly is, especially when someone new comes into the game. Everybody has their jockeying for positions. You know, when the dice get shifted, everybody has to jockey to be able to find that equilibrium again. And then when I think the sun finally settles, you kind of see who comes out of the woodwork, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty tough place to be sometimes, I think, when I see teamwork. Sorry, I'm so glad you're doing this profession and this book and not me. But when I see the words teamwork, I want to go, oh, barf, you know.
Exactly.
It's like, God, you know. And I'm honestly, because you know I'm in my 60s, and I actually liken it to the phrase of oh God, who do I have to suck up to now? You know, to be able to keep my job.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's often
that's
what it means. That's
yeah.
why you want them to clarify it, translate it to observable performances,
right.
So you know just what the expectations are. It's not subjective. What we really don't want in the workplace is to be in a subjective environment. Because it sounds good when a boss likes us and evaluates everything subjectively, that everything goes well, but we know that that can change in a day.
Yeah.
The boss's opinion can change, the mood can change, the boss can change, and then that subjective system works against us. We want to get as much subjectivity out as we can.
And also the
not
person, quote, evaluating you also can change in a day, too. If she sees that you're getting this great glorified thing from the boss or whatever, she can turn around and say, oh, yeah, well, I can have this, 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 and this, and I can nitpick this, this, and this. And it's sort of like it all goes to heck in a handbag, right?
Well, I had that experience myself being in a job that I thought was ideal for me, and I was making the company literally – millions of dollars with my efforts, with new innovations, new training programs. A new boss came in, just didn't like me for whatever reason.
Right.
I know it's hard to believe. I'm sure I'm pretty likable. But this boss didn't like me and forced me out just through the process you said. It was so subjective, the evaluations.
Yeah.
He could say it any way he wants to, create whatever. And you know, bosses often take advantage of subjectivity by creating what they know you will feel is a hostile environment, so you'll leave.
Yeah,
that's
and I think they set it up, don't you?
Definitely. Some do, intentionally. But the bottom line isn't that the boss is evil. The boss may or may not be evil. But the bottom line is, if all of the work processes, not the people, but the work processes are objective instead of subjective, open to interpretation, if my job description's clear, how I'm evaluated is clear, then that takes the subjectivity and the source of that conflict out of play.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the boss doesn't like you, if the evaluation process is clear and the performances are clear, then that even if they don't like you, you're still doing your job and getting recognized for doing your job. That's what the evaluation consists of.
And, you know, sometimes, too, the boss really might take that subjective route because he really needs to keep consistency, or he needs to calm the waters in his business because he might not want someone else to leave that's really important to him, or he might really say, it really doesn't matter, this is what we need to do. You know, it was really interesting. I had an occasion to help out at this certain facility to help them with some work, and I'll change some of the issues with it to be able to protect the people. But the point was is that I had said to them, I says, well, you know, I want to make sure I do it right the first time so that because whatever I wrote on the paper, it went through a chain of command till it got out to the door to the customer. And they said, just put it down. I said, but what if I make a mistake? Don't worry about it. Someone else will catch it. I said, what if they don't catch it? Then we'll worry about it later. The answer is put it down, get it out. We fix mistakes later. And I went, wow, why would you want to fix mistakes later? You know, to me, in my conceptual thought, you know, I'm such a, I am a reformed perfectionist, I call myself. But in dental hygiene, you have to be a perfectionist. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. If this little tiny dot the size of a micromilligram or whatever you want to call it is on your teeth, you're going to come tell me, right? So I was now I'm a reformed perfectionist. But at any rate, when they said about the mistakes, I'm going, that doesn't make any sense to me. Because in this day of social media, social society's expectations and everything, you know, I mean, someone could stand on a corner and yell something, and that gets around faster than squat these days, don't you think?
It does.
Yeah.
That's a continual problem. And bad news, of course, seems to move a lot faster than good news.
Right.
And fake news seems to move a lot faster than the real thing.
Right.
So definitely a problem.
You know, and it just, I don't see why we fix mistakes, you know, at the back end versus let's see how we can, you know, take care of our business from the front end, right?
Yeah, you're singing my song. That's why I appreciated the two ladies that started that hospice business. They said, come in at the beginning. You know, we're small.
Right.
We can't do everything. We don't have a lot of people. But teach us, let's structure the work processes from the beginning and make sure there's no subjectivity in them.
Right.
So that'll just stay part of the culture. They wanted it to be in the culture that, you know, when you have work processes that are clear, the boss isn't the bad guy anymore.
Right.
So the first time they had to let someone go, it was a CNA, certified nurse assistant. But it was so clear. Her contract said, the third time you don't show up for an appointment, your contract's over.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no one subjectively firing them. It wasn't open to interpretation. It was all clear in the contract, and all their contracts were very clear, and the consequences for certain actions were laid out in the contract. It's all very clear.
Yeah, you know, because it's a lot of times, see that all the time, I'll tell you, in healthcare, because especially ones that go out, like I worked with hospice also. When you're going out, it could be raining, it could be snowing, you might be late, something else might happen in the CNA's person's life. But also, too, it's still someone needs to show up at that house at the appropriate time because that is the agreement, you know. But a lot of times we, too, see conflicts about this is what you need to do the job, but it's also but to be in the job. In other words, you might be asking me to do part of the, you're asking me to do the job, the skill or the task or whatever. And then, but I have my own way of dressing it up, or I have my own way of presenting it. And that's where you say that kind of is your fuzzy area, because what that will end up being then is some conflicts down the road when that fuzziness is what you see. You don't really see the actual job that you're supposed to be doing, correct?
That's correct. So if the outcome of each task is clear and objective, that leaves plenty of room for human dynamic, for human creativity. As long as you're accomplishing the objective and you aren't violating any do not do's that are laid out clearly, you want human the human experience. You want creativity. You want them to find a better way. But at the end of the day, the outcome has to be accomplished. As long as you make that clear and they can find a better, more creative, more enjoyable way to do it, you want that. And having a clear process with clear outcomes allows that. It releases the creativity because you know what the boundaries are. I can be creative, but only up to here. I still have to get the job done.
Let's talk about the age groups. There's a lot of people over 50 now looking for jobs. There's a lot of millennials looking for jobs. And you're sitting there hiring, and the millennials come in, oh, yeah, I got it covered, boom, 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 and it's done. You know, elders come in, and they're like, okay, you'd like me to do it. This is how I've done it in the past. Really big conflict in that situation.
That's a subject near and dear to my heart. I recently had a millennial replace a baby boomer that was my age. Sounds like you and I are about the same age. And a millennial came in and could perform the job, do twice as much in half the time. They had the specific skills to do that. It's really not about age groups. It's about skills when you're talking about a business. Now, soft skills are just as important as other skills, but as I mentioned before, you can translate soft skills into observable performances. So the key is to get people aligned with the skills required by the job. The people's skills need to match the job skills, and the person that can do that best should be doing that job regardless of any other factors, their age, their sexual orientation, their gender, their... it's about business and getting results.
And it is kind of the hard thing that we really have to face facts is that businesses are becoming more technology, more advanced and things like that. And yes, the elders are getting pushed out because they simply aren't able to keep up. I mean, I have, you know, my parents are in their 80s. My father's been around his cars since he's been 10 years old. He said he got in a few cars the other day. He said, my God, I can't even find the button to push on the stupid thing. He says, and all the rest of this technology, forget it, you know, on the higher-end cars. And it's true because we really are, I think things are changing so fast in the last 15, 20 years that it is antiquating an entire group of people looking for professions.
It's antiquating the people that don't want to learn the new skills that they would need to learn.
Do you think they can?
I think in technology, I have a lot of examples of people that can. Now, is it easier for them than someone that grew up with that technology? Maybe not. But
is it cost effective to train an elder to do it versus a millennial that already has been doing it since they've been born?
Yeah, that's a very valid question. If you're providing the training, if you're paying the money to train someone, you're going to go generally with the best match of skill sets, and technology is part of that, but it's not all of it, but the best match of skill sets. That's why the employer needs to be very deliberate about all the skills. I'm thinking of the movie, and now I won't remember the name. I think it's called The Intern, that had an older guy, and I can't remember all the names now, but it was a fairly recent movie where he played such an important part, even though he didn't come in with all the technology that everyone else around him had in this new startup company. But the skills he brought of dealing with people were so important. When they recognized that, they wanted him around for everything.
Right.
If they would have paid attention ahead of time and said, we need these skill sets, let's get someone that has them, not just the technology, but how to deal with people, how to interact with clients.
Right.
You need to look for the full skill set, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty tough place to be. On this show we've spoken many times about elders, people saying they feel left out, they feel unconnected to society, they don't have professions, they leave their husbands, blah, 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 the whole set. And I think it is a very sometimes lonely place to be because when you feel like you're not intertwined. In other words, you're not into that flow that everybody else is on. It's sometimes hard to be, and people start to not feel so well and don't do well. They get sick. They may die earlier. Things that get into addictions and stuff, things just go south really quickly.
Yeah, that is a sad commentary, and I wish there were a good fix for for all of those situations. But and a lot of times we put ourselves in the situation and can't find a way out. That's why shows like yours, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jeanette, are so helpful. They can point out, here's how you can find a way out.
Yeah. I've got a great way out. For all the elders that you're retiring, they're to stay on and they can help you with other things that you would have never thought of. A millennial does not know how to change the oil in his car. But an elder can take you out there and show you, hey, this is where the oil goes. And the millennials say, oh, dude, really? You kidding me? I didn't know I had to put something in there. Hey,
that is a great
and
example.
Isn't that valuable? Or an elder woman can say, you know, oh, my gosh, you had a baby. Oh, I love babies. And then let them bring the baby to work and have the elder person stay there. All the time, I always think of these things. I'll say, gosh, you know, I wish I had this. I wish I had that. Or I'd love to go to work and, you know, maybe in the morning I'll do my dental hygiene stuff. And at lunchtime, you know, hey, somebody will bring my daughter over and then she'll stay here for the rest of the day with a caretaker versus being in daycare getting sick. So there's always, I think, things out there. But we really are so afraid to I don't know if you'd call them I guess you'd call them subjective because or whatever you'd call them but they're way outside. But what they really do is they enhance your professions, they enhance your business, they enhance your bottom line, they increase productivity, they tend to it's almost like when you go into the grocery store at Thanksgiving time and they've got those incenses going that smell like pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you kind of need that around. So I think sometimes when people like say, oh, it's time for you to go, we don't need you anymore. Oh, no, we definitely need you. We just would like you to focus on something you'd like to offer us now.
Yes, and that doesn't have to be subjective. That can be very objective by people looking outside of the box, I think, is what you're describing. Mm-hmm. Looking at what do we need here holistically, not just the hardcore technology skills. What do we need to keep the people engaged? What problems are people facing? Let's solve problems. And that's where you look and see the solutions you're talking about very appropriately, and that people, even if they don't have the technology skills, they may have these other skills. You want to find those skills, even if they're subjective skills, you can translate them to observable performances and find people that have them.
You know,
within your own workforce.
That's right. I just had a flash of an elder woman, you know, in a very paper-oriented office, and they're tending, and now they're going to go to technology. You certainly need that woman, because if you say, you know, I really needed that audit, you know, from 1974, and she's like, well, dude, it's over there in the file cabinet, third drawer down, fourth file to the back, it's coded in blue. You know what I mean? So
she put it there in 1974, and knows,
that's
knows
right.
Exactly
but
where it is.
I think sometimes we kick these people to the curb, and we say, well, you don't fit in unless we're willing to look out and say, how can you enhance? How can
mm-hmm.
you, how can you, I guess this word, enhance our business, right?
You know, that is the conversation I mentioned a couple minutes ago, the millennial that replaced the baby boomer. That's what the baby boomer did. We spent, well, several weeks trying to find just the right fit, exploring the different skill sets. And now he is working as a contractor, doing work for me that's right in his skill set. It's not full-time. He can spend more time at home doing other pursuits that are important to him. So it was a good fit for a bad situation. We didn't just say, hey, this person has the skills, you're out of here.
Right.
It's worth finding what is going to give them meaning, at the same time contribute to the business. And that's not an easy process. Like I said, it took us weeks, and I don't know that we have the best solution for the long term, but at least we have one now that fits the situation.
And also, too, when people, quote, retire and they didn't want to or they felt forced out, a lot of times you can hire them on as a consultant. You can say, mm-hmm. we will have you four times a year for one day as a consultant fee. What is your fee going to be? You know, mm-hmm. and just have them come in and say, hey, walk around. What do you feel? What do you sense? What does it seem like it's off? What does it seem like it's on? And a lot of times, you know, I mean, I know for myself, I can walk in any business and I'm like, oh, this is something so off. I can walk from the front to the back of an office and instantly have a list of at least 10 things on either side of that list, mm-hmm. you know. And just because, mm-hmm. you know, you eat and breathe it for so many decades, I think, in our lives, and we just kind of can pick it up. And I think there's a very huge value in the elders, but there's also a value in the young, because the young will say, oh gosh, do I have to write this down on a piece of paper and fill out these forms? I already did this at the other office. Can't I just bring in my flash drive and it'll all go in together? You know, so mm-hmm. I think it's a meshing of all the old and the new, except that, you know, the year 2017, we have forced ourselves to say, oh no, it's got to happen now. It's got to happen now. It's got to be like this. And it's like, that's what's causing so much conflict, I think, is that necessity or that dogma that says it has to be this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we can do, I think you're on to such a good, valid point. We can do a lot to pay attention to mm-hmm. not just the initial obvious skills that we need in
right.
the workplace, but the holistic, all of the skills that we need, soft skills and technology process skills.
You know, and I think it's great about your book is that you talk about also about the performance analysis flowchart. And I really think, I think of Cox Cable. Lord, those people. But anyway, I tell them all the time when I call up, y'all are only as good as your front desk, and your front desk sucks. But
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Good point.
You know, and so when we think, you said about the hospice group, it's really about knowing what happens at point of engagement. When we put mm-hmm. up our LLC, what happens from there to the end result and to
mm-hmm.
be able to walk all the way through it? I think when people do start small businesses or when people get hired for a large company, they really don't know the flow chart. They don't know who does what, how it fits in, and how one person's might overlay into another person's position, and how that needs to mesh together effectively to be able to go to the next. It's almost like when you're laying down dominoes in an S shape, you have to know that you've got the exact angle and that there's no dust on the board, where if a piece of sand comes up, that will pop that one off, and then all of a sudden everything is disjointed. So I think mm-hmm. it's really important to know how that flows all the way through and that everybody understands, hey, the person next to me, oh, she might have a little dust on her, I got to brush it off. Or, hey, the person next to me, she might not get the message, so I have to move that chair out of the way. You know what I'm saying? So it's
mm-hmm.
really about keeping that consistent as a flow versus, you know, pegs in a cog never works, but certainly flow does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I like to focus on processes. I've been in a lot of companies as a consultant, over 50 companies in several different industries, and that's why I like to focus on, pay attention to the processes, because
mm-hmm.
all work is done by a process. You know, you go step by step. Some processes are deliberate, but a lot of them have just grown up. They've grown there.
Right.
And if you will pay attention to them and document them and expose everyone to them, like you're saying, so mm-hmm. everyone knows just how it works, and you can recognize when there's subjectivity, remove it, so you remove the potential conflicts.
Right.
That is how the workplace runs smoothly and the people enjoy and are allowed to contribute. It's paying attention to processes, even though the people are subjective. You can't remove that and don't want to remove that.
Mm-hmm.
The processes can't be subjective for you to
right.
have people performing at a high level in the workplace.
You know, it's interesting. At this one other business that I had been at, there was a certain day for them to water the plants, okay? And this one girl had it on, let's say, a Wednesday, and I had it on Thursday. And on Wednesday, she decided she just wasn't going to get up because she didn't feel like doing it, you know, because she knew that I would do it on Thursday, you know. But there was so much conflict around that, that it ended up being such a knockdown drag out. And I'm going, what is the point here, you know? Or she would not do it on Wednesday, and there was another girl doing it on Thursday, so she just felt that, you know, hey, she's going to do it that day. Who cares? Or she says, the person who had it on Tuesday didn't do theirs. Well, I'm not going to do mine on Wednesday. You can do it on Thursday. And by Thursday, the flowers were dying. So I think that kind of conflict is just so draining, don't you think, in a workplace? It's sort of like it deflates the balloon. Customers feel it when they come in. And it's just like, it's almost like, gosh, did somebody squeegee the crap off the floor today? You know, idea. Don't you think? It feels like it.
Dr. Jeanette, you hit what I call the secret sauce, the really hidden enemy in the workplace. If all of your listeners would think about the conflicts they've had in the workplace, I bet, being a gambling man, I bet
we've all been there.
If they go to the root of that conflict,
uh-huh.
it's a work process, in other words, how you're supposed to get something done,
right.
that is subjective. It's open to interpretation. And so
mm-hmm.
your conflict is over how it should be done, what the
right.
outcome should have been, how you're evaluated on that. And it spreads to the really important processes, like how I get paid, how I get pay raises,
yeah.
how I get promoted, how I get recognized. Anytime there's subjectivity in there, you're asking for conflict. And so I do this very unscientific survey all the time to ask people what percentage, just to shout out, percentage of the conflicts they've had were caused by this subjectivity
mm-hmm.
in the work process. It's always 80%, 90%, 60%.
Yeah.
It's a majority
yeah.
of the conflicts in the workplaces. Well, guess what? If you remove the source of the conflict by making your work processes clear,
right.
objective, people enjoy the workplace a lot more. They're more productive. They give you more. Their life is better.
Yeah. You know, after I spent that period of time there, it was like, how fast can I run from this place? You
yeah.
know? It was like I just couldn't stand it. And then they called me back and asked me to fill in for a certain holiday, and I said, okay. And I kind of like was hesitating, but when I went back, I said, "Ooh, did you guys sage the place or did you bring in a priest? Because the energy feels different,
mm-hmm.
you know?" And they all laughed about it. And they said, "Oh, nothing's changed." But what was different? One guy said to me, he says, "Well, maybe you're different or maybe your energy's different." And I kind of took affront to that, but I let it go for like 2 or 3 days because I was doing a 5-day stint. By the 5th day, I realized it was because I didn't have to water the plants. I didn't
Isn't
have to
that
engage
funny?
In that
Isn't
person.
Isn't that instructive?
Yeah,
that
I didn't
one
have to
conflict.
Engage with that person. I didn't have to engage in that, quote, process. And if they died, so be it. You know, I was there to fill in and help. I was not there to jump into that cycle that they were in.
Isn't that instructive that one conflict caused
yeah.
that drain of
yep.
positive energy? Now,
yeah.
think of that conflict is your boss. You know,
mm-hmm.
a few years ago, the book came out by Buckingham and Kaufman. They work for the Gallup organization. They did over 10,000 interviews, and one of the many brilliant factors that came out of that book was the phrase, people join a company, but then they leave their boss.
Yes, yeah.
We can all relate to that. We don't have to do 10,000 interviews to know that. We appreciate them doing the work to validate
right.
it. But conflict makes us want to run away.
Yeah, I couldn't run away fast
conflict.
Enough.
Yeah, you want to get out of that job when there's conflict,
right.
especially when it's the boss. That's
yeah.
why you can't afford to give the boss power over other people. The unfortunate acronym
right.
for that is POOP, power over
yep.
other people. But too much poop in the workplace just causes us to want to leave.
Yeah.
We don't want someone to have complete power over how we get paid, how we get pay raises, how we get promotions. We want
mm-hmm.
the process to be objective.
Correct.
So the boss doesn't have that power.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's a tough place sometimes to be because things change so much. And I think also, too, our lives have changed. You know, with the that bank thing a long time ago in the past few years, you know, the housing thing all going down, the stock market going down, people losing their families, people moving around, things getting exponentially expensive. Can you tell me how things from the year 2000 to the year 2017 have like 300% increased in price? It's like, what the heck? Where was I under a shell or something that I didn't recognize this, you know? But and it's true, because I think all of these life things are going on, but yet we're still expected to, quote, perform in the same job in the same manner. When all of this other, it's sort of like, you know, I used to have a nice quiet house in Indiana, and all of a sudden this spring there's a heck of a lot of tornadoes around you, you know? It's sort of like, what's changing? And it's the world around us. But then we have to, when we get out of our car and shut the door and open the door to work, we have to try to, you know, hold that all out. I think that's really difficult, don't you think, for people?
Oh, it's so difficult. And don't we all know that? Isn't that a common sense that change is difficult?
Yeah. And
whether it's in the workplace or in our personal life, of course, we're talking mostly about the workplace, but that's just difficult. And so I think the foundation to the whole change management field is to clarify what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the bottom line to it. That's not all to it. That's a simplistic approach to it, but I think that is the bottom line. Let's communicate clearly exactly what needs to be done and why it benefits me.
And also in closing, Rex, I think we could also say that all of the change does occur outside of you. And if you're learning something from it, bring it to the office and see how maybe change can occur in the office. I think sometimes when we get stuck in the paradigm that life is permanent, life is nothing permanent. You know, every single moment is different. But if you, just like I, grew up, you know, 50s and 60s, you got a job, you had a marriage, you had a house, and that was the end till you croaked, you know?
Right.
All of a sudden, that went poof to the wind. So if we can take that ability to be able to change, or some of the techniques you learn to change, and bring it into the workplace and say, you know, we've been doing this whole way all this time, but man, I'm really tired of that. Do you think we could change it up? I don't think you'd meet with too much resistance if you were really someone who felt that, you know, you had a handle on what needed to get done, but you also could see that it could change and be better.
Well, we all like to be able to give a contribution, so the ability to do, to one, to contribute to that process is good, but when it's imposed on us or someone else is bringing that change, at least we want to know clearly what our role is and how we can create the new outcome that's required.
Yeah, change is tough for a lot of people these days, I'll tell you. They get it from all ends, you know? Feels like sometimes that if you walk out the door with the concept that nothing is ever the same, you'll be good to go.
Well, it is the one constant, isn't it? Change is the one constant we can rely on.
It sure is. Well, Rex, it was a pleasure to have you with us. Can you share with our listeners how to find out more about your book and your website? That would be great.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. The book, What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business, is available on Amazon.com. It's also available on my company's website. Now, the company it's a mouthful, so I'll spell it out. It's Mager Consortium, Mager, M-A-G-E-R, Consortium, C-O-N-S-O-R-T-I-U-M.com. So Amazon, it's a little easier to find than that mouthful, but it's a buck cheaper on my website.
Well, Rex, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I think sometimes we just need to have a little semblance of saying, okay, well, what I'm doing isn't working, and maybe I can try this. So your book has a great, great sense of reading through it. You have a lot of steps. You have a lot of tips. You have a lot of, you know, questions and answers, and you could say, oh, my gosh, that's me. So maybe keep reading a little bit more and see what you could do about you and maybe
that's
what you could do about them, right?
I hope it gives hope that these common sense violations you see in the workplace all the time, that you can do something about them.
Right, right. And they will happen. They happen all the time.
Every day.
Thank you so much, Rex, for joining us.
Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Rex Connor, again, his book is What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business? Don't Expect Fish to Climb Trees. Please check out the link on the bottom of today's show page and you go directly to his website where you will be able to purchase his book. And it is really difficult sometimes, but there are always ideas of hope, ideas that we could say, maybe I should rephrase it that way. Maybe I should look at it a different way. Maybe it's me. Oh, maybe it's them. Maybe I just need to find another job, you know? Hey, all of these things are up in the air, and to know that you have options is the reason for hope. When you feel stuck, like you can't leave, you can't this, you can't that, and the judgment and the buts, that's when you're really kind of like at a point where, oh, something needs to shake you. And it will shake you. You'll either lose your job, you'll get sick of people, you'll be fed up, or you'll just say, I'm over it all. And then, hey, that's another point for great hope, because then you have some more options. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.